Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast for July 15th. It's brought to you in part by One World Sports. I'm John Gibson, and I'm keeping cool with Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
Well, you're not with me. You're on another part of Tokyo, man.
All right, I'm keeping cool with you via cyberspace.
Virtually. We are virtually cool, which saves the problem of my actually being cool, which is something of an obstacle. So let's get over it.
I've always been cool, man. I don't know about you.
Yeah, well.
No virtual, none of that stuff.
Well, I'm if virtual or not, if I'm cool, I'm happy.
All right. On this week's show, we have a cool interview with Cam Michelio of the Hiroshima Carp, and we're going to discuss Masahiro Tanaka a little bit more, talk about the All-Stars, and talk about Shohei Ohtani. So let's get started.
Clearing the bases!
All right, the season is about halfway through, but if you live in the United States and would like to see the CL pennant race play out in the second half, go to oneworldsports.com and find out how to watch Giants games live.
All right, well, yesterday, on a Saturday in Tokyo, I had a chance to go out to Jingu Stadium and cover the Carp and Yakult Swallows game and catch up with everybody. It was like old home week, you know. All the Carp guys were there and all the Swallows guys were there, and yeah, it was a good time, and met some new people, and it was very interesting. And I had a chance to sit down and chat with Cam Michelio, who's the Carp closer.
Yep. I'm so jealous you get to go out and cover games.
Yeah, it was a fun one too. Jingu was, you know, the funny thing is that the Swallows did this very un-Japanese thing. They got a sponsor to provide green Swallows shirts. They're kind of, you know, I wanted one. I didn't get one.
They're okay. Yeah.
Yeah. They're okay for free. For free. I thought I saw all the people and said, man, all these people bought these shirts. But anyway, a sponsor gave them all these shirts to give away to fans. And of course, what happened was they sold out Jingu, which they rarely do these days. And they had this tremendous promotion, and, you know, they had a full crowd. It was a great atmosphere. It was like, you know, best of everything. It was so unusual for a Japanese team. Mm-hmm. They so rarely do these kind of promotions, you know, that we grew up with in the States. So it was really fun to see.
Yep. Okay.
So anyway, so that was all going on. And before the game, after his practice in a really sweltering day, Cam and I sat on the bench in front of the fans, in front of the coolers there on the Carp bench, and had a chat. Now, Cam is to inform you, Cam basically is the closer now, but he didn't come in as the closer. He took over that role last year during Interleague from Dennis Sarfate, who's now with the Cebu Lions, who I saw close out in very imperious fashion, close out a game. I'm going to say it was Wednesday.
Mm-hmm.
So it was kind of interesting. Cam is a very tall fellow. He's the NPB website has him as at 2.05 meters, so yeah. 205 centimeters.
Or about 6'9", somewhere in there.
Yeah, six tall is
yeah,
what he
he's
is.
A big, he's a big drink of water.
He is, and he's a big, friendly, affable fella. And it was really fun to chat, and you know, we talked with the different pitchers, and you know, got some interesting stuff. So let's hear what Cam has to say. First of all, I have to start with the podcast welcome here.
Oh, thank you.
So today our guest on the Japan Baseball Weekly podcast is Cam Michelio, and he's a second-year reliever for the Carp. Thank you for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
It's always a pleasure to see you out at the Carp. We don't get to see the Carp often enough.
Yeah.
You play on the wrong end of the country.
Right, right.
So this is your second year with the Carp. And the first year, when you originally came here, what did they tell you about your role was going to be? Because Dennis was the closer.
Right. Well, initially coming over, they told me that my role was going to be setting up for Dennis.
Okay.
And I was absolutely fine with that. I had no issue with it.
Right.
You know, I was more than happy to come over, you know, with my situation back home. Didn't know for certain if I were where I'd be, AAA, big leagues. Who knows, you know. So
okay.
This was just offered contract
okay.
for... significant amount more than I would probably made just sitting in AAA. Okay. So, you know, that was an easy call for me.
And the fact that they said, this is what we want you to
right.
do as opposed to sit and wait?
Exactly, yeah. And the knowing is what was most appealing.
Okay.
Yeah.
So then Dennis had trouble, and all of a sudden, you know, you guys had some, I don't know, about a week of, like, it was like Twilight Zone
yeah.
bullpen
yeah.
episodes.
Yeah, it got a little crazy for a little bit. It's not that he was doing bad or anything. It was just always finding tough situations.
Okay.
And, you know, it was kind of maybe scaring the team a little bit. I don't know
right.
exactly. But we ended up making a transitional move.
It was
you
a seven. You guys blew a seven-run
yeah.
lead or something.
Yeah,
or something.
Yeah. I can't quite remember. But
yeah, it was nasty stuff. So.
Yeah.
So anyway, then you and Imamura
mm-hmm.
got, you know, switched roles. Imamura took your role. And,
right.
And he really developed in a hurry.
Yeah, he took off on that. It was a good fit for him. I guess the years prior, he'd started a little. You know, I wish I knew more about his background here.
Right.
But, yeah, he fit that role really well.
It always looked like he had good stuff, but bad
yeah.
numbers.
Yeah, well, it's kind of deceiving here. You don't know exactly what you're going to get. Some guys have phenomenal stuff and just have a bad year.
Okay.
And vice versa.
Okay.
Yeah, it's really confusing at times to get a good read on what you're facing.
Okay. Well, let me ask now. First of all, you've had a really good year this year. I think you've been very steady.
Yeah, it's one thing I try to keep consistent because for me, just being as big as I am, the hardest thing is being consistent with
right.
mechanics and everything. And coming over here, you never know what kind of mound you're going to be on or,
sure.
you know, dirt or surfaces. And so that was probably my biggest obstacle to not overcome, just try to deal with,
dealers.
I guess. Yeah, I can't really overcome obstacles over here.
You
just got to deal with them.
Do you have favorite mounds and ones that require more blocking out mentally? Or
actually, there's some mounds that are okay and then some fields that you prefer to throw at. So it's kind of hit or miss with
okay.
your feel. Like, I like throwing here for some reason
right.
just because I feel like I'm on top of the hitter, but the
okay.
mound is extremely flat.
Okay.
And so it's a win-win or a lose-lose, or you know, you never know what's coming.
Okay. Now, have you been able to pitch the way you hoped to when you agreed to sign with Clark?
Yeah, everything's shaping up as I would hope.
Okay.
You know, staying healthy was the main thing for this year with how much work I got in last year.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess the behind the scenes in the bullpen, it doesn't really tell the full tale, you know, for a reliever
yeah.
here. You know, you're always up and getting hot and then sitting down, and, you know, it's kind of a whirlwind of events going on down there.
Calisthenics.
Yeah.
There.
And so that's one thing I was happy with.
Is it kind of a surprise to you the first time you went to the first time you're out in the bullpen and you see, what's this guy throwing for? What's this guy throwing
yeah.
for? Is this guy throwing again?
Right, yeah, that's where Dennis came into play. He was pretty key in telling me, like, well, don't worry about what that guy's doing right now. He'll do it the whole game, or, you know, situationally, they'll switch their minds last minute, unfortunately, at times, you know, and you got to deal with that. So he kind of eased my mind at first, because at first it was just like, oof, you know, this is going to be... It's going to be a long year if this is going to stay here.
You stay in touch with him much?
Yeah, we text back and forth quite
yeah,
often.
I saw him the other day. He's had a couple of
yeah.
games.
Yeah, and he's been throwing his butt off as well.
So, okay, well, that's always good to see because, you know, it was a weird ride for him last year.
Yeah.
And it's good to see him land on his feet.
Definitely, yeah.
Okay, now what are some of the adjustments that you've had, that you've made to be effective, to stay, you know, to stay within your game?
Well, one thing that I was kind of surprised to see is how effective a two-seam
right.
pitch was here.
Right.
I figured that a lot of these guys would throw a pitch like that, but I guess mostly when I came over, I noticed it was a split instead of a two-seam.
Right.
And so that made me happy right away because that's what I based my whole approach off of is
okay.
Early contact or just getting ground balls.
You get a lot of movement.
And, yeah, just try to get that ball down and just let it do the work for me.
Does it sink a lot, your two-seamer?
Yeah, I mean, I try to get that good downward movement on it.
Okay.
You know.
Yeah, they tend to, I guess, the shoot, which is
yeah.
sort of the high-tailing
yep.
fastball they try to get.
Yeah.
Not many people are really good at it, but when they
yeah,
are, it's nasty.
Yeah.
Okay, so that has been a big thing. Now, how about your game plans? Have you ever had to come across a situation where you know you had the you executed your pitch, but against this batter, it's not working or in this situation, it's not working, or for some reason this pitch just ain't working.
Yeah, a lot of times that happens. It seems like sometimes you just don't know if these guys have an approach when you're trying to face them, and so they're just swinging at random stuff, and so it really confuses you out there when you're throwing. That's the feeling I get sometimes, but I know they do their homework because they do video all the time.
Sure.
And so it's just, I don't know if it's like a confusing tactic they try to throw upon you or what exactly it is, but it's weird.
It's hard to think along with somebody if you think that they're not thinking.
Right. Yeah. You don't know who's going to win that battle. You know, it's just the unknown.
The famous story about the pitcher is he realized the other guy, Nagashima Shigeo, wasn't thinking at all. And so he just tried to blank his mind and throw the first thing that came to him.
Yeah.
So maybe sometimes that doesn't work. I think it doesn't work for you.
Right. Yeah, I mean, just...
Well, when in doubt, throw your best pitch.
That's basically what it comes down to.
Okay, and let him beat you.
Right.
Execute as well as you can.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Now, how about in terms of the playing conditions? I guess we talked about the band a little bit, but in terms of the travel or the schedule or the constant practice or the bullpen jumping jacks, what kind of adjustments have you had to make to the way you prepare for the game?
Actually, not a whole lot.
Okay.
Because it appears we do a whole lot of stuff, but it's not extreme intensity kind of stuff either. So it is all for... getting you loose and just getting you ready for the game. It's just, and there's no show and goes like you have back home either.
Okay.
You know, you just show up to the park on a day game and just kind of roll with it. You have the same routine every day, which is nice. You know, you get to don't lose track of your routine and what you do to prepare yourself.
Okay. Now, this at the beginning of the season, you know, John and I were talking about the teams and their potential and which of the Central League teams might make a big leap forward. And I started looking at all these carp hitters and going, well, this guy's 20, this guy's 21, this guy's 23, look at all these. And I thought, man, this team could be really dangerous.
Yeah.
And it hasn't turned out that way.
No, we have spurts of it. Like, I guess the last few games we put up, you know, a bunch of runs.
Right.
You know, but... pitching didn't hold up. Right. So
the opening series, there were some flat. The beginning of the season, there were some flashes of that. Gucci had that tremendous series.
And it's all the young guys too that are showing that, which is really good. I think just more experience definitely will propel this team into a good position down the road in a couple of years.
So are you? You've obviously been playing better lately.
Yeah, I feel like they're getting their feet under them a little bit more here.
Okay.
Yeah.
Now, and this is a kind of an unusual year for the Central League in which there's two teams that have basically broken away in battles for third place.
Yeah. The Giants, you know, are always going to compete and probably be leading the division just with the amount of guys they've got that are, you know, bottomless talent pool. But Hanchin, they're ridiculous as well. They're stacked pitching-wise. You know, their bullpen, once you get the bullpen guys in there, lucky to get a guy at second base, so it's a tough road right there. But it's open ended on the, you know, the other end there.
Third place.
Yeah,
could be the playoffs.
Yeah, definitely. So yeah, we just gotta make sure we win these games, you know, against, you know, these opponents. And
how's the attitude on the team? You know, we're gonna beat anybody, or is it sometimes it's sort of pick and choose?
I don't know. It's pick or choose depending on the person.
Okay.
I guess. You can tell some guys are extremely nervous to go out and either fail or win. I don't know what it is at times, you know, but you can tell at times someone tightens up quite a bit.
There's a lot of there's so much background that you don't have to deal with, you know, growing up against, you know, facing these players.
Right. Yeah.
That's always a mystery.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, just wish you continued success this year, and hopefully we'll talk to you again soon for the broadcast. Thanks much.
Appreciate it.
Pleasure.
All right. Well, thanks again, Cam, and hopefully we'll get you on the show again before too long.
Thanks a lot, Cam. It was good to hear from you.
So what did you take out of Mr. Michelio's chat?
Well, it was fun. I mean, he's such a down-earth guy. You know, I,
yeah.
As soon as I heard the interview, I had to go back and look and say, now, where is he from again? Because I really couldn't pick off the accent because, you know, my parents, my dad was in the Air Force and we lived all over the state. So I can usually pick off the accents a little bit. And I couldn't figure out where he was from. So I went back and saw that he was from Montana. And I'm like, Montana? I don't know any baseball players who come from Montana in particular. I mean, it's probably my lack of knowledge, but, you know, he's so down to earth and so calm and so, you know, you can see how he comes out and why he's kind of steady, because it comes through in his personality that he doesn't get too high and he doesn't get too low, after losses or wins or anything good. I've never really seen him, you know, with a fist pump or anything out there when he finishes anything off or even in a big situation or anything. But the thing that really, that left an impression on me, I should say, is he said, the approach of the hitter, sometimes it seems like they swing at random stuff. And I'm like, yeah, I see that too. It looks like they go up there with no plan. Their plan is to hit anything that's near the strike zone or maybe not even in the strike zone. But if they get their pitch, if they get something that they think the pitcher might throw, they're going to try to hit it. Kind of like the Craig Brazell kind of approach, where if you see the pitch that you're expecting coming, you just try to put the bat on it.
Well, Craig's a bad ball hitter. You know, he said, you know, the best way to get me out is just throw it in the strike zone and think that I'm not and hope I'm not looking for it.
Yeah.
So, I get that impression too, that pretty much most batters are up there basically trying to get the first strike on themselves.
Yeah.
You know, and then sort of take the at bat from there and then look for a specific pitch before when they get two strikes, when they're looking for anything.
He came forward and said, yeah, well, he knows they prepare and he knows they have a lot of data. And you've seen it. I've seen it.
Sure.
These guys, they have data on, okay, this particular pitcher throws this particular pitch in this situation with runners here and there. If you're playing
it's
against
left-handed.
If you're playing this team, playing this team in a day game, outdoors, on a Sunday, you know, after 5 o'clock. That's what some of the players said. Just don't give me that stuff, you know, but we know they prepare like crazy. So it's not that they're using the tactic of confusion or befuddlement to make a pitcher just try to outthink himself.
Well, I thought about that. Was a very clever, analysis, I thought, on his part to try to put some sort of, I guess, I think it's a very elegant way of putting his expressing his surprise at that, you know? Maybe they're trying to confuse us.
Yeah, I mean, sometimes it does look that way, and I mean, it might work, because if you swing, I've heard Brian Bullington say the same thing, that guys were swinging at pitches that they had no business swinging at, and that it didn't seem like they had anything going on up there, so he just decided to keep the ball in a certain location or stay with a certain pitch and not throw it for a strike, because, you know, the batter didn't look like he had any particular thing in mind. But that could work, you know, because if you think the batter's not looking for anything in particular, pitching, swinging at random pitches, it makes your brain stop, you know, for a second and think about something else.
You sound like you speak from experience.
I've had brain stoppage.
Oh, okay.
I've experienced that.
Well, okay. We're not going to go into too many details about my experience, because that's, real life is too scary. But, that for me, that was big also. And I thought about that. And so often people talk about that as a pitcher, that it's almost like, as a friend of mine used to say, when I was in high school, nobody messed with me. I wasn't very big, but I was crazy.
That keeps everybody away.
Because nobody told you what you were going to get.
Yep.
So, you know, you go up against some of these hitters and you just never know what, you know, they're going to swing at. And so it's, how can you ever be quite comfortable when nothing is predictable?
Yeah, I think we have a guy like that at our office.
Wow. Let's not go there. Let's not go there.
All right. I won't go there, but I just did. But I will turn around and go back right away here.
Okay, yeah. You turn, baby. How do you signal a U-turn? Okay. Well, that was one of the things that got me. And the other thing, which it seemed very ironic, and the little mention about Takeru Imamura, who essentially, because he was so successful last year as the setup guy for Cam, starting in the end of May, he earned a spot. Well, he earned a call-up, basically, to the Japan team for the WBC. He didn't pitch much.
Because he didn't pitch well. Yeah.
Well, he didn't pitch well. He didn't pitch much. But, yeah, you know, it wasn't like you competed for the job. Once they called you up, all they did was cut the injured people. So, you know, he basically earned that job, that trip to the team, to the tournament, by what he did last summer.
I agree.
And as I said to Cam, you know, he's a guy who always had some really nice – he had some good movement on his pitches. But he always had – he gave up big runs. He gave up bad runs. He had all kinds of awful things used to happen to him. But as soon as he got into that role, it was like, you know, it was like flip the switch. It was like a different pitcher was out there. He was throwing that stuff at the right time, and people were looking for it and not able to hit it.
Oh, well, I agree. I think he's not on the same pace that he was on overall, the numbers that he finished with last year. And an example is he walked all of last season. He walked 14 guys and fanned 54 guys in 58 innings. And in this year, in 32 and two-thirds innings, he's walked 10 guys already. So that's just four fewer than last year. So he's he's going to surpass last year's total soon. And he has only struck out about half of the guys he struck out last year in more than half of the innings. And a slight increase in base runners, but not that significant. But he's still getting the job done. Remember, I said I think he was all-star worthy.
Yeah. Well, the reason I mentioned Ema, well, actually, not the reason I mentioned him, because we were talking about that shift last year suddenly from Cam being the setup guy and Dennis Sarfate being the closer to Imamura and Cam in the last two spots. And as I was listening to the interview again, it struck me that before Cam Michelio came to the Carp, what struck me about his numbers was here was a guy who had great strikeout totals. He had great walk totals. He had great hit totals. He basically did everything you're supposed to do to be successful, but he gave up tons of runs.
Yeah, you talked about that last year, that his ERA was suspiciously high for a guy who did this well in terms of
whip. Well, yeah, who has a 4.98 ERA when you're striking out, you know, 1.5 batters per inning and striking out five times as many guys as you walk, and you're allowing fewer than one hit an inning? It's weird. Yeah. It's like, did everybody just hit, you know, 400 with the bases loaded or something? It's really bizarre. So anyway, I thought I remembered that and at the time. So yeah, it was an interesting interview. Also, Cam's so big that, you know, you understand the bit about his balance. Most of the big pitchers I've talked to, you know, baseball teams love big pitchers. Because if everything goes right, here's a guy who can be better than anybody. But it's such a gamble because of all the big moving parts. You know, Randy Johnson told me a couple of years ago that essentially the first 5 years of his career were a blur. There were a constant battle with, you know, identifying his release point and having the core strength, the massive core strength necessary to control that enormous body.
Yeah, I can't remember his name at the moment, but during the WBC, the Dutch team had a 7'1" pitcher, and I said, geez, by the time all those elbows and kneecaps unravel and get the ball toward the plate, if there's a runner on, you know, they can just about stroll to second base or third base and steal off the guy. And sure enough, when he allowed some runners, they just started to try to motor around. And that's a big thing for pitchers. I think the optimum height maybe for a pitcher might be 6'4", 6'5", somewhere in there, and not too big. So I understand the issues. And you know, he talked about – the other thing that caught me was – well, that stayed with me was the fact that he talked about the mounds being different. And because we always assume that they're the same, and – you know, and I gotta assume they're at least, they have a minimal height.
Well, they do have. Of course, there are technical requirements for the mounds. They're
right.
Technical, and essentially they're all supposed to be exactly the same height.
Right. And that he said he feels like he's, I mean, it was kind of confusing to me that he said he felt like he was on top of the hitters there at Jingu.
But
the
mound
was
flat. You got me. I'll have to ask him about that. I think he's been in Japan too long. He's starting to say it feels different.
Yeah. Well, I think
I like the feel of that pitch.
Yeah, but it's just about that feeling. It's about perception, you know, how you feel on the mound. And probably at Jingu, I would imagine that it feels like you're closer to the hitters, and that's what he means by on top of them, but that the mound is flat. But maybe at Nagoya Dome or Tokyo Dome, the mound seems a little bit higher, but because there's more depth behind the plate, that you just don't feel as close. So that's probably what it is, and it's the depth of perception that you feel at any particular stadium. And it's something that, you know, we don't think about all the time.
It's a perceptive analysis, Mr. Gibson.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Allen.
I like that. Okay, so anyway, you know, and you talk about the carp. Now, he was so positive. He was almost syrupy positive about the carp outlook this year because they play so badly so often.
Well, and the thing that lets me down about the carp, and I'm sure it does with their fans too, is in it. It seemed to come out too at the end of the interview where he snuck that comment in about, I don't know if he was talking about pitchers in particular, but he said sometimes the guys look a little bit tight, a little bit apprehensive. And I don't know if he said it was maybe their fear of failure. And I don't know if that permeates to the position players and they end up kicking the ball around, but it just seems like they don't make the defensive plays they need to make in games where they have a chance to win. You know, they're really close. They're either leading, the score's tied or something, and they end up making a bad defensive play because just like you said, they're apprehensive that they tighten up. Something goes wrong.
My
personal feeling is essentially, yeah, I see the same thing happening, and what I see is more of guys trying to do more than they're capable of. You know, you see this a lot with teams which don't have a pattern of success, which don't have a history of success, that players lack the confidence that they're good enough, that if they play their game and stick to what they can do, they can succeed.
And I'm with you there. I feel that they can do that. You know, they look at their record and you look at where they are. They're not, record-wise, they're not great, but we've talked about the other teams, the bottom four are essentially right there smack dab, you know, together in the same pot. And it's just going to be a run at the end that puts somebody over as long as they play somewhat consistently. I mean, it seems like they're all going to finish under 500. It's just a matter of how far. So they're right there. I think they have the pitching. I think, you know, with Yusuke Nomura seems to be coming into form, and he was struggled early and he was deactivated and had shoulder issues and all that stuff, but I think he's coming around.
Otake was really good at the beginning of the season. He's been so-so since.
But so-so is good. It's good enough.
So-so is good if you're the Carp.
Well, so-so is good enough if they score runs. I mean, you know, the image that we have and that we've had for a long time is that they don't score any runs. But they're only two runs going into Sunday's games. They only had two runs fewer than the Honshu Tigers.
Than every other team in the Central League.
They were the lowest in the Central League, but only two fewer than the Honshu Tigers, and they're in second place. They're just playing better defense and pitching a little bit better. But I mean, if the Tigers can be 14 games over 500 with 290 runs. The Carp, you know, they're 12 games under with 288 runs. So obviously you're giving up too many runs, but, you know, the image I have is that they don't score. And
well, I have to agree with you that their problem and the problem is, well, one problem is they don't score enough, because I don't care whether, you know, they don't actually have Japan's worst offense this year. I would think the Swallows probably. You have to give the Swallows the credit for having the worst offense.
I don't know if I'm going to give them credit, because they have the home run leader who keeps pounding the ball.
They have
more runs than the Tigers, too. They have more runs than the Tigers,
they also play in
the Dragons. They do.
I think the Carp offense is not their big problem. I think their defense, their pitching and defense, well, their defense has been a problem.
Well, the defense is killing their pitching. So it's not just the pitching.
They've got a very bad situation there where, you know, they make it hard for their pitcher. The fielders make it hard for the pitchers, and the pitchers blow up and things get out of control. So, that seems to be the biggest issue, is, you know, just settle down and play baseball and don't panic. But there's still panicking. It's not coming from the manager, according to, Cam and Brian Bullington said no. He said, you know, this is, they said Nomura is a great guy to play for. He's very calm and level-headed, and
I've had reporters tell me that he doesn't, you know, he's bizarre, crazy in the things he does, but that nobody's mentioned that to me other than reporters. So, you know, you have to take that with a grain of salt.
Yeah, well, I mean, I know you talked badly about him. I think it was our first year of the podcast, and that was fair because he made some mistakes. And
he did weird stuff.
And he did weird things.
Yeah, 2011.
He did do some weird things, and he probably does do a lot of weird things. But the thing is, I see with him is he doesn't shake his head in frustration. He doesn't put his head down when his team makes these goofy, unclutch mistakes in the field. He tries to stay, just like you said, level-headed and calm, and try to push forward and try to figure out how to play through the mistakes to win the games. It's just that they're just making so many that they can't win these games. So if they can turn that around, which I think they can, you know, it's obviously good. And then they had a really great debut series from their latest import, their latest first baseman.
You have it. You take it, man. You take it.
Kila Kaiahue.
And I'm gonna go for Kila Kaiahue.
Okay. All right. Okay. And we'll,
those are both guesses. We know nothing.
Yeah, we'll have him on the show. And I will tape him saying it, and I'll just play the tape every time I have to say his name.
we'll just paste it into the show. We'll just go, Kila.
Or we can call him Double K. Double K is a great nickname.
All right.
he had this.
Speaking, I got to throw the trivia question out there because I think everybody just ignored it, and none of the Japanese press even got it either. I didn't ask any of the CARP guys, but.
Okay.
And this is okay. So when Kila made his debut against the Yokohama Bay Stars on Tuesday
at Yokohama
Stadium, he went 1-for-3 with a home run. Okay, that was his first top flight NPB game. He had played 10 games in the minors. Now we're going to ignore those 10 games.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if you can tell me how his 1-for-3 CARP debut was his second straight 1-for-3 game in top flight competition in Japan. Okay.
And that's sufficient time. All right. So you can stop the podcast if you need to, but we're going to go ahead with the answer. Go ahead and tell them.
The answer is that Tequila first came to Japan to play official games with the Oakland A's in 2012. So last March, he was on the Oakland A's roster. And he started the second game against the Seattle Mariners, and he went 1-for-3.
And that was opening series at Tokyo Dome.
Correct. So, you know, probably some reporters will say, "Well, how do you like Tokyo Dome? Have you ever been in a ballpark like this?"
Well, the other thing is that I was listening to the radio broadcast, and he said he had come to Japan as a teenager and played some games around Japan as well. So he's been here before.
Yeah, well, that happened. You know, we had the bit about Andrew Jones playing mm-hmm. Little League ball here.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, okay. So that, you know, it's always a tricky one. Of course, we've had a number of players play in Japan who were born here.
That's true too.
Military
yeah.
people. So, yeah. So there's always, you know, it's a small world, and no singing necessary.
All right. Well, I have some trivia too.
Oh, do you?
Who was the last foreign player to have 4 home runs in his first 3 games in Japan?
I was going to say nobody.
That guy's everywhere.
Was there somebody?
Yes, there was. He played for your team.
Was it Jack Howell?
It was Bob Horner in 1987.
Oh, darn. That's about the only buddy, the person you could think of, Moipon Bob Horner. With the overalls, doing the Asahi beer commercial, I think it was.
Yeah.
All right, Bob Horner, who said went back to the major leagues with the St. Louis Cardinals and told people that Japanese baseball isn't really baseball. And then within a couple of years, Bob Horner wasn't really a baseball player.
Wow. Wow. Here, dude, take this out of your back and your front. Okay.
Get a beer. Grab a beer as you go out, Bob.
Yeah, maybe we can get you a towel for that. It was a really, really good, gaudy first series for Kila. I'm going to call you Kila. Sorry, I haven't met you, but when we meet, I will get the pronunciation. But you know, he's going to settle down. I tweeted out, I sent out to my tweeps. You like that? Not peeps, not tweeters, but peeps, my tweeps. I sent out to the tweeps, I said, this is a really great series for him, but remember, he's playing at Yokohama against the Yokohama pitching staff, so it's probably unfair to grade him on that.
His home run streak came to a halt at Jingu, where everybody else was hitting home runs.
Okay.
And Vladimir Ballantyne shows, you know, not just the first time guys can hit four in three games.
That's right. And good old Coco. He's hot Coco right now. He's steaming.
He's indeed. He's steaming. I mean, it's hard to hit one out. It's almost, I would say it's pretty much impossible to hit one out of Jingu because the bleachers are so large.
Yeah.
And on top of the wall in the back, they've got a net to keep the balls in the park. It's about 10, but he hit it. He hit his grand slam. He slammed it off the wall at the atop the back of the bleachers and stayed in the park. And then if it had been about another 15 feet higher, it would have gone out of the park. But I've never seen anybody hit it. I've seen Balvino Galvez do that. He hit the back wall once when he was pitching for the Giants.
Yeah. I didn't see it live. I just saw that he had hit one, and then when I saw the replay and the left fielder try to move, I'm like, where are you going? You know, where are you? What are you doing?
Well, the first one, the outfielders just rotated their heads. That one, I didn't see how far that one hit up on the hitter screen in center field, but it was pretty impressive.
You know, one thing before we move on, tonight the Carps started three players, and I don't know that I've ever seen this, and I don't know that other teams have enough players or have the players like this to do it, but they started three players whose last names were all single character kanji. Did you notice that?
I did not. I'm going to guess. Let me guess who they are. I would say Yuichiro Mukai is a favorite player of mine, so he's probably one of them.
That's one.
Soyogi.
That's two. Eishin.
Yeah. And I'm going to cheat and look at the other guy, Yoshihiro Mara.
That's correct. Yeah. Isn't that weird? I've never really seen that. That was really odd. Maybe we can get Michael Westbay to look up and see how many single kanji guys have been in a lineup in recent years. Anyway, we got to move on here and go on to the next thing. But thank you very much again. Thank you for doing the interview. It was good.
Oh, well, thank you. It was a pleasure.
All right. So we talked about Masahiro Tanaka last week to set up, which I really didn't think he was going to do, extend this streak that he's got going. But he threw another shutout. He's up his consecutive scoreless inning streak to 40. He is 12-0. To start the season, he has won 16 decisions overall. The streak is the fourth longest in the Pacific League.
The 12 game streak from the start of the season is the fourth longest in the Pacific League.
And the NPB record for consecutive scoreless innings was set in 1958 by Masaichi Kaneda, and it's 64 and a third innings. So he's got a ways to go before he ever catches that.
Yeah, you know, circle the date on your calendar, son.
Yeah, well, and then the record, the Pacific League record is 54 and two-thirds innings, and that was Tadashi Sugiura in 1959.
Left sidearm lefty for the Nankai Hawks. In fact, both of those guys are were lefties. Well, they're still left. Oh, I think Sugiura died, so he's no longer a lefty.
Well, okay. So, yeah, it is the fourth longest streak in Pacific League history. So I don't know. Do you see? I think he's going up against the Orcs Buffaloes, who fell back in. You know, this Pacific League race is great because you win a couple games and you're in second place or third, and you lose a couple and you're in last.
You win. I swear. Or if Orcs win seven games in a row, they're in first place.
They'll be in first place. Yeah, but so, I don't see him win seven games in a row this season.
No, that's a problem.
But it's their problem. But he's got Oryx next. I'd like to see him do it, but I have to believe Oryx is going to score a run. That offense, although you think the offense is really great, but it doesn't rank that well. It doesn't look that great on paper. Let's put it that way.
Okay.
They're in last place for a reason. They've scored the fewest runs in the Pacific League. So it's possible he can. The Eagles are, as of today, 11 games over 500, and the Oryx Buffaloes are 2 games under, so they're not that far in terms of games, the game difference, but they just play so differently that, you know, But Oryx has
it's like they don't have a plan.
It's like they're swinging at everything with random pitches. Yeah, I don't know what's going on. I'm going to predict that he gives up a run. I say with no confidence at all.
It's the cunning Oryx Buffaloes will snap that string. Yep. Well, he's had a couple of games now. His numbers, results were very good. He had 4 hits and 7 strikeouts and 1 walk and 1 hit batsman last week. But you know, he's had other games that were a little dodgier. Like the time, I think he gave up 9 hits and had 3 strikeouts, but he's just, you know, he's been a monster when he gets into a jam.
Yeah, and that's what I've noticed is when he gets into trouble or when there are people on base, he doesn't give in and he starts to hit locations and he starts to baffle hitters. And it's not like he's throwing fastballs and zipping them by everybody. He's working corners. He doesn't just lay in and say, look, I'm going to throw a 4-seam fastball. Here it is. You know, you take your best shot.
Well, I think the pitch he does with that is he says here, I don't think he does that at all. Andrew Jones had a comment that the only pitcher in any way that reminded him, the only thing of his that reminded him of any other pitcher was that Tanaka, he said, seems to have a knack for knowing what the batter is expecting.
Mm.
And then throwing that pitch that he's looking for out of the zone so that they swing it air.
Yeah. You know, I haven't gotten to see every pitch, obviously, and I haven't gotten to see every game that he's thrown. I've seen pieces and parts here and there, too. But it seemed like one of the games that I watched in the middle here, this 40-inning run, he just located some pitches really well when there were runners on base. And he's gotten a little bit of luck, too, as well as, you know, good plays behind him. So it's not all him, but it's a great team thing, and I hope they can keep it going. I don't want Oryx to break the string. I hope it keeps going, but if any team breaks it, I think Oryx, I wouldn't mind if it's Oryx. But that's my personal preference. I think he doesn't want his string broken at all.
Well, I want to see, you know, I want to see it going as long as it can go, because it's just amazing. He is interesting. I did talk to a couple of scouts the other day at Jingu who saw them pitch, and I was the dummy. I was at Tokyo Dome that afternoon.
Mm-hmm.
Just actually asking about him, but I was thinking, you know, I got to get home and blah, 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 blah. And I didn't watch it. I wish I had, but it was my day off and I'm thinking, I'm going to get home. So I missed it. So that was unfortunate, but. What people said was quite interesting, you know, what makes him special. I'm not going to divulge too much, but, yeah, it was interesting. He's an interesting pitcher. He's a real fighter. And one of the numbers that my great mentor, Mr. Isao Chiba, did for Kyoto News that I noticed in our database today was, you know, he said this year he's pitched 12 times with the bases loaded. There have been 12 at bats with the bases loaded.
Mm-hmm.
And the opposing batters are batting 0-for-12.
Yeah, and one of those games was a game against the Chunichi Dragons in Interleague where they tied the score with a run and had the bases loaded and nobody out and didn't score another run in the game, and that game went in extra innings. He didn't get a decision, but one quick note, he's allowing 316 to right-handed batters in batting average and 176 against lefties.
Mm. Wow. So, that does. Pitchers tend to be funky that way because batters will have weird years where, you know, they hit a left-handed batter will hit a, you know, just because of the sample size.
Mm-hmm.
Left-handed batters will do better against left-handed pitchers than they did against right-handed pitchers. I mean, there are occasionally fluke scenarios in there.
Okay.
But, pitchers tend to be the other way around because their pitches, you know, so often dictate the flow of the at-bats, where they break and how they break. So
that is
very interesting. Here's another one, since we're talking about Oryx versus Masahiro Tanaka.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to this year, he had a 2.40 ERA against Oryx.
Uh-huh.
He was 12-3. He was 12-3. This year, he's 2-0 in two games with a 2.40 ERA. So I guess his career ERA is 2.40.
Yeah. Wow, that's amazing.
It's pretty, I thought, wow, I'm looking at two different databases. I've like, something weird is going on. But, yeah, he's allowed an even 50 runs in 160, about 190 innings. So, well, good luck, Oryx guys.
Yeah, they're going to play at Kyocera Dome this week.
Good hitters
starting,
park.
Starting
better,
on Monday, yep.
Better hitters park, and we'll see what goes on.
All right, now let's talk about the Golden Child taking a shot off the noggin there as Shohei Ohtani was hit by a wayward fly ball. Now, I don't think the fly ball was right on its normal course, I think. I think the wayward...
It hit a wayward pitcher.
Yeah, it hit a wayward pitcher.
Get the track.
Yeah, two-way player Shohei Ohtani got hit on the head, on the side of the head with a batting practice fly ball on Thursday. I was watching the game, and I didn't know because this was before the game. And so they showed the video during the game. And he actually, I saw this thing, and I saw this ball flying. Of course, I was at work, so I didn't have the volume up at all. And I saw this ball flying, and so I said, why are they showing a batting practice fly ball? It's not going out of the park. Who's hitting? You know, my first thought was, who's hitting? Who is this? Was it some celebrity there who made contact and sent the ball to the outfield? Oh, wow. And then you watch this ball float and float and float, and then it conks this guy in the head. And I'm like, ooh, who's that, you know? And the camera pans around and you can see the number 11 and it's Ohtani and he's holding the side of his head. And it turns out he suffered a minor fracture. Now they call it an incomplete fracture and I don't really know what that means. So I'm calling it a minor fracture.
I think incomplete means it didn't attend enough classes.
it got an eye.
Or you missed the pop quiz on Fishers or something.
Well, it just missed the eye, so I can't say that it received an eye as a grade. But wow, the upper cheekbone. They said he needed to rest for 3 days and not have any activity, which I guess he did because he came back on Sunday and hits a pinch hit, 2-run home run in his first at bat. After getting conked in the head by ball, I guess he was angry at baseballs now.
I think so.
Take a bat to him.
Take that. Look out, fans. Hope he is, you know, he's going to say 4 or something.
The first thing I'm thinking is, okay, I hearken back to the time in camp, and I don't know if you remember me saying this on the show. I said, remember they had him taking ground balls during camp
with the right arm
tucked behind his back. I said, if this is such a precious commodity for you, why are you letting him wander around the outfield when they're flying balls and projectiles that could hit him?
I know.
What are you people doing?
I know. Give him one of those little kids' leashes.
Give him a bubble. Forget the leash. Just put him in his own little bubble.
Oh, just have a a pitcher walker. A pitcher walker out there watch, you know, with Ohtani on a leash watching the balls flying and batting.
Do something. I mean, have somebody shadowing him. I mean, and all the pitchers, nobody should be out there getting conked in the noggin like this. So manager Hideki Kuriyama, he took the blame right away for the incident. He said, you know, it's the team system that I have in place, and it wasn't good enough. And he, quote, I'm the most to blame. I'm the one who has a system in place that would allow someone to get hit. And I'm like, yeah, how come it wasn't you? You know, so I guess they're going to change the way they work out before some games. I guess we have to see how Ohtani Gate affects the team.
The story we're missing here is that the batters might have been having a pool to see who could land one closest to Ohtani without hitting him.
I bet it's the part-time right fielder started that game.
Well, it's about 8 of them.
Unbelievable. We kid because we kid. But
we kid because we can, not because it makes any sense or it's nice or polite or anything like that.
Yeah, well, it was unfortunate, but hopefully he's going to be okay and they figure out some way to protect all the pitchers. And,
right.
You know, they just got Bobby Keppel back, and he's been injured for so long. And he got a victory today on Sunday in his season debut. But he hadn't pitched, very much at all. So for him, he's a friend of the program, and we like him, and we hope to talk to him again soon. And
indeed.
hopefully he can stay healthy. Moving on to our next subject, we want to talk about the All-Star Plus One selections. Now, in the Central League, it was Shota Dobayashi of the Hiroshima Carp,
right,
which I can't figure out. And then
I could figure it out because when I was at Jingu the other day and he was taking batting practice, all the women in the stands were eager to take his photograph.
Yeah, yeah. And then in the Pacific League was Seiichi Uchikawa, which I think I left him off of my snubbed list because the outfield in the Pacific League is so strong that I just looked past a guy hitting over 300, way over 300. So, sure. But Dobayashi, what is he hitting now? I'll look it up as we're talking here, but I think it's 210 to 11.
That's 213 when they selected him.
Yeah, that, you know, and the guy, again, it looks like third base is just a position for studs because in the Pacific League, it was pretty crowded there. And Shuichi Murata of the Giants is not having a bad season.
Nope.
And would have been a perfect fit for this plus one. And yet he's going to be eating chicken wings or someplace at Hooters or someplace watching the watching the game with us.
Why are we going that way?
All right. Well.
Wait, it's you.
Oh, yeah. It's
you this time.
Someone else will be there with me. It won't be just me. But, yeah, I don't know why. I'm just so unsatisfied with the All-Star voting.
I don't know whether they patterned it after the U.S. program, but I like the U.S. one. I mean, it's improperly executed sometimes. I guess Jim Leland wanted a right-handed reliever.
Yeah.
You stack the decks with the deck with right-handed relievers. But, yeah, have the – Give some depth to this vote. Give some rationality to this vote. Uchikawa said, "Look, you can choose." He said he was so honored because you could choose practically anybody in the league to be on this. So, and he said specifically, you know, there were some great players who are not on the team, and he mentioned Casey. He mentioned two players. One was Casey McGee. And I'm trying to remember who the other one was, but he said, "Look, I haven't had as good a year as these other guys who weren't even voted in."
Right.
But you know, he was so happy that the fans recognized, you know, the body of work, that what he's done as a player and what he represents and the whole image thing. He says, "Yeah, he was very honored."
Yeah. Well, yeah, he was hitting before Sunday's games 330 in 79 games, and we know he's not a great defensive player, and that might cost him in terms of, along with the big chin, that might cost him in terms of popularity.
Yeah, I think the chin points, although he's got a double, you know, he's got a doppelganger there at Yaefu Oku Dome, or whatever that thing's called.
Yeah, Yahoo Auction Dome.
yeah, they don't know how to spell Yahoo. It's funny that the sponsor is Yahoo, and they don't know how to spell Yahoo.
It's a mess.
Isn't that interesting?
It's a mess. Yeah, the other thing is I'm really finding it hard to get into the All-Star Series, but I'm going to go to that Saturday game at Jingu, I probably get there in the middle of the game and just kind of hang out and hopefully get an interview and talk to some people and, you know, experience that all-star atmosphere again since I haven't been in so long.
Since the time you went to Miyazaki or more recently?
More recently at Yokohama. I think it was 3 years ago. I can't remember now.
I can't even remember the last all-star game I was at. It's been quite a while.
Yeah. So it'll be fun. I'll go there and schmooze and talk to people. But, yeah, I'm finding that I can't get into it. I'll probably be really into the first game, and then obviously I'll be at the second game, and then the third game is on a Monday?
Tuesday.
It's a Tuesday, so I'll be at work again, so.
No, it's correct. It's Monday. It's Friday at the Dome, and then the two outdoor games. There's a makeup day after each game, so.
Okay, so yeah.
I'm gonna bet you that barring a typhoon, they're gonna play in, biblical downpour on Monday. nobody wants to have to come back to Iwaki Stadium except the people who live there, and they would prefer it get done that night.
All right, and our last topic today for today's show is Tadahito Iguchi of the Chiba Lotte Marines. He is approaching his 2000th hit combined in the United States and in Nippon professional baseball. I believe he still has 10 hits to go. He's got 1,496 hits in Japan, and 300 of them on the nose are doubles.
Wow.
Isn't that cool? And then he's got 222 home runs. And, you know, he had a good run there in the States, obviously.
Hmm. You know, he had two very, very productive years with the White Sox, so.
Really great, yeah. But the thing I remember about him most is that 1999 season with the Daiei, the Fukuoka Daiei Hawks, as they were known at the time. And that young team that they brought to the, well, it was mostly young, that they brought to the Japan Series and ended up beating the Chunichi Dragons.
Okay.
And I believe it was 5 games, if it serves me correctly. And, you know, their current manager, Koji.
Koji Akiyama. He was the defensive star of that series.
Well, you guys say that. I just remember the play because it was such a pivotal play.
Sure.
In the series, but I didn't think it was that great a catch, especially given the batter it was. You remember who hit that ball?
I'm not. You tell me, Mr. Dragons fan.
It was Koji. I forgot his first name.
Teruharu
Koji, who hit that ball. And he's not
Teruyoshi
Koji, and he's not a power hitter.
Nope.
In fact, that was probably the hardest ball he'd hit in 3 or 4 seasons.
Okay.
But it was a floater. You know, and Akiyama had to go back and he had to jump a little bit, but it wasn't that he had a line drive and it wasn't way up high off the wall. It was just this floating ball that he had just had to go back and catch.
I think he was shading him towards center because he didn't think he could pull anything.
Well, he probably shouldn't have been pulling anything, but it was a pretty good play. It was a pivotal play because there were runners on base and it would have changed the outcome of that game.
Climbed the wall to get it. Yeah, it wasn't the only good catch he made. He made a couple of big plays.
Yeah, but that one in particular was the one that got a lot of attention, and I think it was that great a hit.
Well, it was a good photo op, you know.
But that team and Iguchi, he played so well and was such a leader on the team in terms of getting on base, causing havoc, making all the defensive plays. I think that was his coming out year for that team. And that's what I remember most about his career here.
Yeah, he had about 3 years from 99, and I don't remember what year he left the Hawks. I'm going to say it was 2004. But from 99 to 2003, he was arguably the best player in Japan.
Yeah, yeah.
Kojima, and, you know, if Matsui had stuck around, then it would have been Matsui. But, you know, he was a 330 home run, 30 steals guy. 60-70 RBIs, score, you know, 60-70 runs. What a great player.
Yeah, turning double plays at second.
And a great guy, you know, very down to earth. And, you know, and John's the president of the Tadahito Iguchi fan club, so any questions you have, you can just forward those to John.
Yeah, right.
Oh, I'm sorry. Did you?
No, I really like him. I've always liked him as a player, and when I got to do a long sit-down with him, after he had come back from the United States, that was one of the better interviews I've had with a Japanese player. And he's always very cordial when I go out to QVC Marine Field and we chat a little bit. So yeah, I'm a fan of his.
Yep.
And he's going to get that 2000th hit soon and automatically be inducted into the Golden Players Club. Do not pass go, I'm sure.
That's right.
But he'll probably get, well, I don't know. I don't think he's going to reach 2,000 hits in Japan.
That's tough.
Yeah, I don't think he's going to do that. But, yeah, you know, great job for him. We'll see how they cover it. And if you have a blazer waiting for him the moment he gets that 2,000 hit, I suspect they will because he's a Japanese player.
Yeah, they don't have to wait, sweat it on the website, wait to see if it's announced.
Right. All right, well, we have to announce that we are leaving for the week.
I thought I was going somewhere, man. I'll do that.
But we will be back next week. There are only a few games until Wednesday, and then the All-Star break begins. We'll be talking more All-Star. Who do you like to win the series? Who cares? I think I'm going to root for the Central League. I'm going to root for the Central League. I always do.
Cares.
Yeah,
well,
I need to say that.
I guess the Pacific League fans, people who you know, love their Pacific League guys. I usually pull for the Pacific League guys because they don't get credit for what they do. And as long as they don't have a numbskull managing them like Osamu Higashio or somebody like that, they got a good chance to win.
All right. And on that note,
can I say the word numbskull?
Oh, okay. Sure.
Okay.
On that note, make sure to send your questions or comments to yakyujohn@gmail.com or leave us a note on the Facebook page. Thanks a lot for listening. We appreciate it.
Yeah, look forward to talking to you next week after Game 2 of the All-Star Series.
All right. Enjoy your baseball.
Ciao.